This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the Human-Animal Connection Show. I'm delighted to finally get to speak to Dr. Edward Basingwhite. He is a traditional veterinarian as well as a holistic veterinarian. So he's blending both worlds, and he's got a lovely little friend here on his lap. Is this yours or a patient of yours?
This is Jim. She's a little whippet. She's about 8 months old, and she's a little rascal.
Okay. And you like the little rascals, right?
Well, I've certainly got one.
Hi there, sweetie. Yeah, she's adorable. So I know you began in the traditional realm of veterinary work. And what inspired you to want to explore and expand and combine to more holistic methods?
Well, a couple of things happened. One is that when I was about a year and a half out of graduation, I'd left my first job because it was terrible and was doing a temporary job. And another vet came to the regional town I was at from the city to help some horses called Dr. Tom Ahern, and he worked with horses' necks. Mm-hmm. He would take horses that had a forelimb lameness that they'd x-ray and no bot couldn't find a physical reason for with those technologies. He would work on the neck, release pain and tension, get the vertebrae moving, and the lameness would go away.
Wow.
So I'd never heard anything about this at university, and I was completely fascinated. He sat down, told me a whole lot about nerve root compression, neck back pain, and how it can affect the body in lots of bad ways. So I immediately started thinking about dogs and cats and necks and backs in dogs and cats, and started then being curious about, okay, am I missing pain and dysfunction in the spine of the companion animals I'm working with? And it turned out I was missing a whole lot of things. Looking for them, I found a whole lot of animals had significant pain and dysfunction. That's when I started working hands-on because I wanted to help these animals.
Yes.
There were no modalities, no trainings in those days. So I just started playing around with touch and movement and pressure, and pretty quickly started seeing animals show nice changes and improvements. So that's where I started with the physical hands-on work.
Yeah.
And then a few years after that, I came down with chronic fatigue syndrome, and Western medicine could help me a little bit in the beginning, but very quickly ran out of any kind of useful answers or ideas. And that's when I started a really long, deep journey of exploring alternative, complementary, holistic things to get myself well. And everything that worked for me, I tried out on animals, and turns out it worked really well for animals too.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. I know. Well, I think pain is really something that we need to understand better in animals, because obviously they can't tell us in words that they're feeling pain, and it may not be even obvious in behavior. But I think sometimes we see odd behavioral things that may be pain that we don't realize, as well as physical problems. So I think it's wonderful that you're really trying to unwrap this mystery of pain in animals. And so you have a method also that you teach. What's the name of your method?
It's called the Whole Energy Body Balance Method. It's a combination of neurofascial body work, working with the nervous and fascial connective tissues, and also more intuitive and energy healing type approaches.
Great, great. So you've got some hands-on approach, but you're also kind of feeling intuitively to how to move your hands. And so it's not like one method that works for all dogs all the time. You're really kind of
it's a big toolkit of different types of hands-on skills that you then flexibly adapt in an intuitive way to the needs of the animal.
That's great.
That's under your hands when you're working with them.
Great. And does this tend to be something that you're going to do once, or do over weeks, or forever, or on and off? How does it work?
Well, you get the best results if you do this work consistently.
Okay.
Certainly my little fluffy guy, Mitzi, is getting pretty old these days, and I'm doing probably nearly daily at least some kind of body work to help his tired old body feel more comfortable, because he's quite painful.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I created online training programs, so that people at home can learn how to wake up the natural healing abilities and gifts in their hands and find and relieve their own pet's pain, anxiety, trauma, and make a big difference for them.
Great. So whole energy body balance. Just give us an idea how long that course is so people have some idea.
When we run through the live stream series, it's 4 half days over 4 weekends spread out.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have all the content available on demand, mm-hmm. so that people can go back and watch and review and work through it as many times as they like. But if you're doing maybe 2 hours a week, you'd probably get through it all in about 3 months. If you put in more time, you get through mm-hmm. it more quickly. But mm-hmm. but even at that pace, nearly all of our students see, you know, visible improvements in their animals within a matter of a couple of weeks of starting the program.
That's great. And does the same methods work for cats, dogs, horses, pigs, rabbits, or
yeah.
or
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yeah, we have Web Bodywork for Pets, which is a companion animal focused training.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Have Web Energy Work for Animals, which is more the intuitive approach for working with any and all kinds of animals. We have a Web for Horses program. We have a Web for Humans because it works just as well on human bodies as it does animal
mm-hmm.
bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there are probably more similarities in human bodies and non-human animals and non-human. What is that? I forgot. I'm all confused now, those words. But you know what I mean? Like, we have more similarities and we have differences. But what are some of the differences in terms of this work and in terms of pain and energy?
I think the biggest difference is that humans can say, you know, ow, it hurts here. And
right.
animals can't.
Right.
And another thing about animals that have this silent pain is nearly always kind of chronic pain that builds up slowly in the body over time, though it can be a legacy of surgeries or accidents or injuries. You can have an animal that might have an injury,
mm-hmm.
the acute phase of the injury where they get obvious symptoms, but when they recover, they have a legacy of pain and tension that gets left behind in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about animals is that it's really surprising how little signs they'll show of even severe soft tissue neck and back pain a lot of the time. There's often mm-hmm. little or no symptoms that mm-hmm. humans will be able to see and understand as a call for help.
Mm-hmm.
And really the only way that I've found that I can be 100% certain of knowing when there's pain is to feel in the body. And when you bring gentle pressure into the body, the animal go, oh, yeah, that's the sore spot. That's where mm-hmm. it hurts, how much mm-hmm. it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And Mitzi is who taught me this, because quite some years ago I missed really terrible neck pain in Mitzi's body for about 3 weeks.
Oh,
he seemed to be fine at home. Was running around, jumping off the couch, keen mm-hmm. to eat his dinner, playful. Then I took him out to a training weekend, and he was just a little bit more reactive than usual when other dogs came close to him.
Mm.
But I went home, got my hands on the top of his neck, and he went, "Oh yeah, I've got a lot of pain there."
Wow.
And it turns out that he had fallen on the steps 3 weeks before that time.
Wow.
And my wife had actually seen it happen. But mm-hmm. as she said, he got up, shook himself off and seemed okay. So she didn't think to tell me about it. And
mm-hmm.
that was kind of my wake-up call, that
mm-hmm.
no matter how experienced you are, no matter how much you love your pets, if you don't know how to feel into their body,
right,
you're going to get pain.
Wow. Wow. That's really, really, I think, yeah, it's the new thing that we need to learn is how to recognize pain and how to help alleviate it. So when you're doing let's say you find a spot and you add just slight pressure and you feel that sensation, how do you feel that as pain? You feel it as resistance or a little jerk, or but how do you identify it as pain?
There's kind of two things that will happen. One is that you might get the body kind of have a physical twitching,
mm-hmm.
spasmy type thing with mm-hmm. with engaging with the pain and tissue,
mm-hmm.
but mostly what will happen is that the animal will look around. They'll tell you in their body language and in their behavior that, oh yeah, you've hit a sore spot.
Yeah,
like someone came up and poked you in the ribs, you go,
right.
Oh yeah,
bro. Uh-huh. Okay, and then what do you do once you find, okay, you found that spot, it's a sore spot, what's your next move?
Well, my next move is to do body work, to get mm-hmm. hands-on and to use, we've got a whole range of different kinds of skills, ranging from very gentle things like craniosacral type connections
mm-hmm.
through to really deep mobilization and release work through the core of the tissues and structures surrounding the spine. And I just keep going with different types of connections and hands-on skills over different parts of the body until, you know, the animal starts telling me that, oh, this spot isn't as painful as it was before. And, you know, I have one dog that I've been working with for over 3 years. When she came into me, she had really severe reactive aggression with the other dog in the household. And she'd been to behavior specialists and other vets, and they'd all missed really severe neck pain. Now, we worked on that neck pain, and when we got the neck pain right, the aggression pretty much went away.
Wow.
But even after 3 years, we're still seeing steady improvements in that dog's behavior and in her body from having consistent body work.
Right. Wow. Now, you mentioned an interesting word, connection. So is it when pain is in place that the body gets disconnected, like it's not firing the way it's supposed to, and when we alleviate, then it, I guess energy can flow or the connection can be resumed. Is that accurate, or how do you see it?
I think that's one way to talk about it. Wherever you've got pain, restriction, stiffness, tightness, wherever the neurofascial network, that kind of three-dimensional spider web of tissue that provides structure and form and allows movement throughout the body, wherever there's pain, there's restriction. And if there's restriction and the body can't move, then there's a lack of life force energy being able to move through that spot and perhaps downstream of that spot. Certainly, if you look at it from a nervous system perspective, if you have nerve root compression, if you get the vertebrae get a little bit misaligned somewhere and they start squeezing that big nerve, or it comes out of the spinal cord and distributes to tissues and organs and structures in the body, then that can have a profoundly unhelpful effect on all those parts of the body that are innervated. It changes the tone, can cause pain, it can cause changes in blood flow and all sorts of things.
Yeah, wow, fascinating. Now, I know that you've really pioneered some work with CBD. Tell us about your work with CBD and why that's important for animals.
Look, I honestly believe that a CBD-rich whole plant hemp extract, I really prefer a whole plant extract because you don't just have CBD in that.
Okay.
You have a whole host of other cannabinoids, up to over 100 different active ingredients coming from the whole plant. Of course, it needs to be low or no THC. We don't want to get our dogs stoned.
Right.
It's not helpful.
Yeah.
Except in some rare cases of palliation of cancer and stuff, maybe we might consider THC. But CBD is probably, it would be definitely the medicine that I prescribe far more than anything else, because it's safe. There's hardly ever any side effects. And if there are side effects, they're usually very mild and not, you know, dangerous. It's an incredibly powerful anti-inflammatory pain relief. It's an immune modulator. It helps with gut issues and IBD. It helps with epilepsy. It can help with palliation of cancer, and in some cases may even slow down growth of tumors or cause them to regress. So that's pretty rare. It's just because it works with the endocannabinoid system, which is a deep homeostatic regulatory system that is found in the physiology and bodies of all vertebrates. Every kind of being that has a spine has this endocannabinoid system, which creates cannabinoids that are made by the body. So I think it's kind of miraculous that this plant makes substances that just harmonize into the system of all of us who are vertebrates in such a beautiful way. It's something that I give to all sorts of animals with all sorts of problems, and nearly always see really good benefits from it.
Wow. Now, do you make your own, or do you have a product that you recommend, or where?
I do not make my own.
Okay.
It's the regulatory environment here in Australia that to grow commercially is a lot of big hoops to jump through to be able to do that.
Right.
So I find or direct people to anyone who's growing a high quality organic whole plant extract that is very low, no THC and rich in CBD.
Okay, great. So we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, maybe we'll go back in time a little bit and talk about you growing up on a big cattle farm and how that impacted your future path in life.
Sure, I'd love to do that.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human-Animal Connection, where we're speaking with veterinarian Dr. Edward Basingwhite, and he is both a traditionally trained veterinarian as well as a holistic veterinarian. Now, I know you grew up on a cattle farm. I think your family had a big cattle farm, or I don't know if farm's the right word. I don't know what you call it.
Well, it would be a cattle property here in Australia, whereas in the US you'd call it a ranch.
Ranch, right. Okay,
it was about 120 square miles, and we had anything from maybe 5,000 to 7,000 head of cattle and up to 120 odd horses, because we did all that cattle work on horseback. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful, beautiful place to grow up on.
Mm, okay. And did you know right away that you wanted to be a veterinarian, or did that emerge later?
I have very early memories. There used to be tuberculosis in the feral pigs and in cattle in Australia. So there was a testing program. I have very early memories when I must have been quite small of vets coming and doing the TB testing of the whole herd, mm-hmm. Injecting the tuberculin into the tail fold, coming back the next day to palpate. And if there was a swelling, then they'd have to slaughter the cow and go and carve it up and take samples and send it off to the lab to see if there was actually any tuberculosis in the animal.
Oh, you mean they had to kill the animal first and then discover?
Yeah, the animal. Yeah.
And then discover if it was tuberculosis.
Yeah. I remember very early on being, in a bit in awe of these veterinarians in their overalls doing these things with animals. And even at that age, and reading James Herriot's books.
Yes.
He has a lot to answer for. I think he's got a lot of people into veterinary medicine, that fellow.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the old days. Not quite like that anymore. Well, it's house calls.
It isn't.
Yeah. Is he kind of your hero still?
Oh, look, I think he's someone that he always had a real compassion for animals that came through in his writing and the stories that he told about being a vet. Yes. And it was very honest.
Yeah. All creatures great and small, we're talking about, right?
That's the one.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk for a little bit about, I know you help people in the process of preparing for animals that are going to be transitioning. What is some of the wisdom that you might impart to our listeners about that?
Challenging period, I think, getting ready to say goodbye to your animal. Mitzi, my little dog, is about 14 years old, and over the last 3 months or so, he's suddenly slowed down a lot and gone quite deaf, and his vision has got a lot worse. So we know that we're starting to close in on the end times with him. Mm-hmm. Preparing for transition, I think the first thing that's really important for people to do is to be willing and prepared to let their animal go.
Yeah.
And to be able to kind of say internally or even outwardly to their animal, okay, we know that your time is coming, mm-hmm. and when it's your time, we'll help you go. We're not going to cling. Yes. We're not going to hang on. We'll if as soon as it's time, we'll be right there helping you have the best death that we can help you have, mm-hmm. And a lot of humans struggle with that because they love their animals so much that they get entangled energetically and emotionally with their animals, and there may be a kind of emotional codependence from with the human and the animal that can be difficult. And I really believe that animals will stay here for their humans, no matter how uncomfortable they are, because they love their humans so much. But if the humans consciously can say, right, I'll release you, I'll let you go, and accept the emotional grief that comes with that, I found that with older animals that are leaving us more slowly, my experience has been that there's a lot of grief leading up to the death.
Right.
Because you're saying goodbye over a long period, you know, it's that kind of long goodbye. But if you have a sudden death, there's a tremendous amount of grief after the death because it's unexpected.
Right.
Which is to say that there's not grief after the death of the ones that might take a little longer as well. But I think the other thing is a willingness to grieve, because I really do see grief as a direct measure of your love for your animal, you know, and being willing to not to shut down on it, not to run away from it, but to really open up to being present with feeling the sadness of the loss of your animal. And if it's an old animal that's on the way out, well, you know, and you start feeling sad about them getting ready to go, well, let yourself really feel that. Don't avoid it. Don't suppress it. Don't deny it. And then the other thing with a good transition, of course, is really good supportive care, giving your animals all the pain relief and supplements and everything that they need to be as comfortable as they can be, palliative care, and knowing when the time is right. My experience with working with a lot of people over a lot of years is that nearly everyone that I work with, probably 80, 90% of the people that I work with, are holding some kind of guilt around transition of a pet in the past. And about half of those people are beating themselves up because they feel like they helped their animal die too soon. Half of them are beating themselves up because they waited too long.
Right.
If there's one thing I could say to everyone out there is that I truly believe that there is a kind of a moment of the inevitable when it comes to helping pets transition. And when whatever that timing has been for you and your animal in the past has been just perfect.
Yes.
Because it's just the only time it could have happened for you and the animal in the time and place that you're in, with what you knew, with who you were at that time. And forgiving yourself and letting go of anything around past transitions is incredibly helpful for helping you have the healthiest possible transition with present and future animals that share your life.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned your intuitive work. Do you often get an intuitive feeling that it's time versus like maybe it isn't? Or do you have that knowingness for other people's animals? Or
I do perceive in the you know, the animals have a physical body and they have an energy body, which is like an egg of energy that surrounds the physical body. Do see some changes in the energy systems when animals are coming close to the time of transition, where they start drawing all of their life force back right into the central core of their being, so that they can then use that energy to project their being out of the body at the point of transition.
So it takes energy to leave.
It does, absolutely. Yeah. It's like it takes energy to get birthed, right? And that can take a variable amount of time. So I don't ever actually tell people how long I think it's going to be. I think it's healthier for me to help people understand potential decision points, like maybe the animal can't get up anymore, maybe they stop eating, maybe they're having more bad days than good days on average over a week or a couple of weeks period. Maybe they just look at you and say, I'm done.
Right.
There's all these kind of, it's good to have awareness of, okay, how am I going to know when I get there? What are my decision points going to be, and how am I going to respond to those kinds of things?
Right.
So I don't, it's rare that I will say to people, yeah, it's time. I prefer to help people come to their own decision, but absolutely, sometimes people will come to me and say, look, I don't know. I can't. It's like, and another thing that can happen close to the point of transition with older animals is that they can be up and down, and they might have three or four awful days, and suddenly you've planned and you booked bed in, and you get up in the morning and they're like, oh, I'm feeling good today.
It can be
a real roller coaster and quite challenging to work out exactly. And that's why I think whenever you come to that point of inevitability and it happens, is the perfect timing for you and that animal.
And when you when you're doing euthanasias, do you feel that there's a moment? I mean, I know physiologically there are things that are happening, but do you feel the moment where the spirit leaves? Is that like a moment? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been doing intuitive energy healing type work for decades, so I've got a very refined sensitivity to what's going on energetically, spiritually at that time. And, you know, I'm supporting the animal in their transition out of the body, and often mm-hmm. I'm untangling the animal from the human so that they can, their spirit, their soul, their whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. can have freedom to go wherever they next need to go and do whatever they next need to do. Not that I totally understand exactly right. what that is.
You can't understand it all, but do you have a sense that animals, well, you know how humans fear death? Do you feel that animals have a fear of death, or just fear of suffering, fear of pain?
I think it's rare that animals have a fear of death. Most animals know exactly what's happening and they're totally okay with it. And even animals, I don't think, have a huge fear of suffering, most of them. I think if you have an animal that has a really low pain tolerance, some of them don't cope well with pain. But the majority of animals can teach us a lot about how to embrace and accept unavoidable pain and suffering.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful. So are you someone who believes in telepathic animal communication, or what are your thoughts on that?
Telepathic, intuitive, empathic connection. I absolutely believe that humans can receive and interpret information energetically when they're interacting with animals, and sometimes that can be an overt kind of message. I mean, I remember other times I was working with an animal, a dog, and got to a certain point on their back and it was really sore. I said, has this dog ever had a fall or an injury? And they said, yeah, it fell right off the top of the A-frame and landed on its back. Mm-hmm. So there can be all sorts of glimpses of information in the body, in the energy systems, that when you learn how to open up our natural human intuitive empathic capacity, which most of us shut down at a very early age because our society is not open to it, mm-hmm. and because it's so uncomfortable to be present with a lot of the trauma and violence in our human society, that I think a lot of little ones just go, oh, that's too much. Shut the gates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you had a story about a dog named Benny. Would you like to tell us that story?
So Benny was a retired racing greyhound who I saw some years ago. His mum called me in because Benny had a thunderphobia. But when I got my hands on Benny, he was about 12. Mm. He'd had a long racing career, won a lot of money, and he was just a grumpy old man who spent most of his time on his bed. Mm-hmm. When I got my hands on Benny, he was just a screaming bundle of extreme silent pain. Mm. Now, his mum was shocked and horrified and had no idea that he had so much pain in his body. So we did a series of whole energy body balance bodywork treatments. We did one a week apart for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Came back the second week, been a little improvement. Came back for the third week, been a little improvement. When I came back for the fourth week, Lisa was just going, well, you know, I can't believe this. Benny is literally a completely different dog. He wow. has started doing zoomies for the first time in years.
Wow.
He started stealing teddy bears from our daughter's bed, which he's never done before. He has started playing with toys, which he's never shown any interest in all the years we've had him. Uh-huh. He's seeking touch and connection.
Oh.
And he also became the world's naughtiest puppy after that, too. Oh, started things and tearing things up and all sorts of stuff.
Hilarious.
So he's like my poster child of the dog that shows you no sign that they've got incredible levels of pain. And when you remove the pain and the trauma, suddenly you get a whole lot more dog that's a whole lot wow. more happy, a whole lot more playful, and a whole lot more active.
That's a beautiful story. Yeah, beautiful story. And what about Clyde? Tell us about Clyde.
Well, you know, I started off working on necks and backs and finding pain in necks and backs of animals. And then I thought, well, you know, the neck and the back is, the spine is only part of the body, and there's all this other soft tissue. So I started exploring working with the whole body and the neurofascial network. And I noticed that some of the qualities of touch I was using would cause animals to relax. Mm-hmm. So I started really using touch as a medicine for anxious animals. Now, Clyde came in to see me because he was eating the house when he was left alone. And he was the biggest, muscliest staffy I've ever seen. He was just a monster. But yeah. lovely, friendly, and very anxious little guy.
Uh-huh.
So I had one appointment with him where I taught his owner how to do the whole energy body balance, one of the touch skills that's particularly strongly relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they went home and they probably did about 50 times more relaxing touch than any other client I've ever told to do something. And both the daughters gave him lots of relaxing touch. Within 2 weeks, his separation anxiety was gone.
Wow. Wow.
You know, they moved house 2 months later. He ate one lot of curtains with the stress of moving house and then nothing.
Wow.
Now, that just, given my standard veterinary training, is a miracle and couldn't happen. But I use relaxing touch with anxious, traumatized animals
mm-hmm.
a lot, and it can lead to incredible improvements.
Wow. Wow. And can you just give us a little taste of that touch, what kind of touch that was for the separation anxiety?
Well, I don't have time to teach you the kind of more advanced relaxation touch, but the first thing you want to do is just slow down your hand speed.
Okay.
Use your normal pats, but make it like a glacier.
Right, right.
As slow as you can go without stopping. Now, a lot of dogs are going to look at you and go,
what are you doing?
That's not how you're supposed to pat me. And if you've got an anxious or traumatized dog, when they first relax, it can feel really strange and uncomfortable, and they might say, well, I'm out of here. I don't want that touch. It's weird.
Right.
If you persist and insist and keep doing it over time, you retrain their nervous system from this kind of stuck in aroused anxiety back into healthy relaxation and help them learn how to self-regulate as well.
Yes, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I think a lot of people, it'd be great if all shelter volunteers could learn this, because the shelter dogs need so much help. Right. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I've been speaking with Dr. Edward Basing-White. And give us your website, how people can get a hold of you.
Yeah, if you want to work with me, I work with people on Zoom all over the world, in person if you're close to me here in Australia. You can go to thehealingvet.com, contact me there. If you want to learn more about whole energy body balance and maybe get enrolled in the online training programs as a home or a certified professional practitioner, you can go to wholeenergybodybalance.com, and you can also search for The Healing Vet on Facebook and find us on socials there, on Insta and all that if you want.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm so glad you're doing the work that you're doing. Thank you for relieving pain and for teaching other people to relieve pain, because the world could do with less pain.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. You've been listening to The Human Animal Connection. We'll see you again real soon, I hope. Aloha for now.
Thank you for tuning in to The Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.